Hightower Lowdown. You can see why at www.hightowerlowdown.org.
Welcome back to the Rick Smith Show. Now, here is Rick Smith.
So, as you know, anybody who's listened to the program longer than 5 minutes knows I'm a big proponent of Medicare for all. Look, I'm a union member. I've got probably the best health care money can buy. And I am one of those guys who says, you know, I'd be willing to give it up if we could make sure that everyone had good quality insurance, that when they got sick, they got to see a doctor. When they had something go wrong, they got it taken care of. And guess what? They don't go broke. And as I said, you know, I just had a hip replaced. To this point, it's cost me about $130. That's the kind of insurance that I have. You know, not 20%, not some of the nonsense I've heard. It's cost me about $130. And that's more than it used to be. For me, the idea of ensuring that everyone gets the best possible care is so important. And that we're all in this together, so important. And here to share some thoughts on how we get to that Medicare for All. And this is one of those things. I've often questioned why corporate America wants to deal in healthcare. So when I found this group, Business for Medicare for All, I said, I got to talk to somebody. And that's why I've asked its founder, Joe Sandberg, to come talk with us. Joe, thanks for taking time for us.
Thanks for having me. And one point I want to make on that mention of being a union member and being willing to give up the health insurance you negotiated for. Imagine how union negotiations would go if you didn't have to negotiate for health insurance.
Oh, absolutely. No, I'd be higher wages. I'd have about 23 grand in my pocket more.
Correct.
Because I know exactly how much we pay for health care. I got this little green book on my desk, our contract, that says exactly how much per hour goes into the health and welfare fund. And I would like to have that in my paycheck. And I'm willing to pay a little bit higher in taxes to ensure that not only I get good quality insurance, but everyone gets it. Because if we have a system where we have health winners and losers, I'm sorry, that's not a great system.
But Rick, you shouldn't have to pay much more in taxes. The people who should be funding Medicare for All are the billionaires and the giant monopolies that are presently paying almost no taxes. We know so many different companies worth hundreds of billions of dollars in the stock market that literally pay no cash taxes whatsoever. So this idea that you're going to have to pay higher taxes shouldn't even be the case. It should be those giant monopolies and billionaires.
Yeah, but even still, I'm okay with it. In fact, you know, I advocate returning to the Dwight David Eisenhower tax code, a good socialist president, because if you look at his tax code, you know how you couldn't get much more socialistic than looking at Eisenhower's tax code with a top marginal rate of 92%, and I think there were 100 different brackets. Every $2,000, you paid a little bit more. To me, that makes sense.
Right. Well, and as you mentioned, I'm one of the co-founders of Business for Medicare for All. The reason we founded this group is we wanted to marry the case we know, which is health insurance for all is moral, with the case that people need to know, which is health insurance for all in a single-payer system is rocket fuel for the economy, for entrepreneurship, and for workers. Let's talk about entrepreneurs for a second. One of the biggest reasons that so many entrepreneurs, in particular women and people of color, aren't able to live the American dream of starting a business is they're fearful, understandably, of taking the risk of leaving their current job where they have health insurance to start a new company where they might not be able to afford health insurance for themselves and for their workers. Well, if you take away that untenable risk of not knowing whether you'll be able to take yourself and your kids to the doctor, imagine how many millions more people will start new businesses. New businesses are where most new jobs come from. If we have more new businesses, we have more competition for workers, which means wages go up. I want to talk about another factor when it comes to workers. Imagine all of the millions of people who don't ask for raises because they're scared asking the person for a raise when that person is also the person who controls whether you get to take your kid to the doctor. And then finally, when we talk about making sure American businesses are competitive around the world, remember that our companies, in particular our small and medium-sized companies, are competing with other companies from Europe and from Asia, where they have single-payer health insurance systems where they don't have to incur the healthcare costs on their income statement, and therefore they can sell their goods more cheaply. So we're putting our businesses and their workers at a competitive disadvantage around the world.
Yeah, and don't forget Canada. You said Europe and Asia. Don't forget Canada. Canada's got a really good single-payer system where, you know, it actually, everybody I've met from Canada says, you know, Tommy Douglas is a hero, and if you take it away from me, there's going to be hell to pay.
Well, I want to make one other point, which is sometimes people say, well, if you move to a single-payer system, you won't be able to incent innovation so that we can cure diseases and invent new medicines. Let's just unpack what baloney that is. This idea that a single-payer system can't provide substantial economic rewards is wrong for two big factors. First of all, we have an industry that's paid on a single-payer system currently right now. That industry is the military-industrial complex. There's a single payer for the military-industrial complex. It's the U.S. government. And there are plenty of parts of the military-industrial complex that make plenty of money. So there's nothing inherent about a single-payer system that can't deliver motivating economic rewards. The second part I want to address is some of the opponents of Medicare for All set up this boogeyman that, well, there's going to be places that don't have doctors and all the rest. What's great about a single-payer health insurance system is that ultimately it's accountable to us, the voters. What do you think is going to happen if in one congressional district there aren't enough doctors? That member of Congress is going to be pressured by her or his voters to make sure that there are economic incentives to get doctors into that area. So actually a single-payer system democratizes healthcare in America.
Now, that's an interesting point. And I would argue, you know, the people who say that we won't have innovation, you know, the reality is most innovation is done through tax dollars at our research universities across the country. Have a system already in place for innovation, for research. And if we were to strengthen that by putting more investment into those universities, and, oh, I don't know, maybe instead of allowing patents to go to corporate America, maybe we, the people, hold on to them and reap the benefits. You know, because I've talked about this with my kid. You know, what if Jonas Salk came up with the cure for polio or the vaccine for polio today? How much would they gouge us for that? How much profit would they want from it? I mean, it's amazing.
That's right. And at some level, we also have to ask ourselves, what kind of society do we want to live in? Do we want to live in a society that characterizes the present, where infant mortality has risen for four straight years, where average lifespan of Americans has literally declined for three straight years, where we're spending twice as much per person on healthcare as any country in the developed world, and our outcomes are 50% worse? It's not only immoral, it's an embarrassment to the notion of American ingenuity and greatness.
Yeah.
American greatness should be synonymous with the best healthcare system for everyone, and we're falling still short of that. It's ridiculous.
It is ridiculous. So, but you know, I keep asking the question, why? You know, why is it that you have us? You know, I've been watching this dust up between Sanders and unions, some unions, not all, over, you know, we negotiated these healthcare benefits. We're going to hold on to them in a death grip. Instead of saying, hey, you know, we want to be at the table and negotiate for the best healthcare we can get at the best cost. And then, you know, those wages that we were spending for healthcare, maybe we put those into people's pockets because we're in the best position to do that. That seems to me to be a logical position. But, you know, how is it, again, this pitting against each other is one of those things that they do masterfully on issue after issue. And this just being another one.
Well, I think there's two elements to this. First of all, old habits die hard. We've been inculcated with this idea that single-payer health insurance is anti-business, anti-worker for 50, 60 years now. So it's going to take time for us to move away from that. And on the second point, I just want to strike a tone of somewhat optimism, which is as far as we have to go, think about how much closer we are today to single-payer health insurance than we've been in our lifetime.
No, you're absolutely right. I mean, you know, I remember, you know, Hillary Care. Was the first, you know, kind of in my lifetime, the first real talk about a universal system. And it just got battered and beaten and mocked. And now we're actually having a conversation. And it's amazing to me, you know, because I don't know why all businesses aren't going, hey, I don't want this hassle. I want to do my widget or whatnot. I want to, you know, play with my software or whatever. I don't want to provide health care. I don't want to provide pensions. I mean, these are things that I think need to be discussed amongst workers. And I love the idea of the portability of a single payer plan, because guess what? If I get sick and I lose the union job that I have, I lose the union health insurance that I have. If I have the ability to get portable benefits that I can take anywhere to any job, or if, hey, I want to do this again full time.
Well, here's another reason for optimism. I think we'll eventually get to single payer because there's really only one industry that benefits from the current system, and that's the health insurance industry.
Right.
You're right to note, Rick, that frankly, businesses and even some of the monopolies that we criticize, rightly so, on the show, none of them are benefiting from the current system. It's really just the health insurance companies. And that's not a strong enough constituency to defend the current system. They may be able to hang on to it for another 4 or 8 years. And look, the sooner the better. We can't wait another day as far as I'm concerned. But the end is near for the current health insurance system. Single payer is a matter of time. It's just a question of, are we going to organize and ensure that time comes in this election, and not in 2 or 3 elections from now?
Yeah, good point. So what do you say to the person, though, Joe, who says, you know what, we need to hold on to the ACA because we've got the ACA. We just need to tweak it, make it a little bit better.
I'd say that's like saying, you know, we should hold on to the horse and buggy. We don't need a car. Horse and buggy gets us around just fine.
Excellent point. Now, what do you say about the implementation? You know, I get the argument, well, you know, this is too big. We can't just do this overnight. And I don't know, is anyone saying that it has to be done overnight?
First of all, no one's saying that. You're right. Second of all, this idea of scaring us around the implementation is so comical. We're expanding an existing program that's one of the great American success stories, Medicare, which serves currently people that are most in need of health care, operates on only a 2% administrative overhead level. It's actually one of the great success stories of organizations in modern human history. And that's not an exaggeration. So it's worked so well for the part of our population that most needs medical care. Now, you're telling me that we're going to expand it to people that frankly need it less, right? Because as you go younger in enrollees, people who are just generally going to be healthier. That's totally plausible. And by the way, when we started Medicare for scratch in the 60s, it took, you know, a couple of years to enroll everyone over the retirement age. So we can't expand an existing program without some hiccups with all the improved technology we have.
Right.
I think it's a silly counter-argument.
See, for me, the first step would be going, okay, fine, we're just going to open up Medicare to people who are 55 instead of 65. And then, you know, gradually expand that way. Maybe meld the ACA into it and say, look, we're going to offer a public option and you can buy into Medicare at any age. To me, it seems there's so many options that to have this kind of closed-minded thinking, which I think is only to destroy the system, is dangerous to me.
Rick, have you noticed that it's the people who go on TV and thump their chest of how America is so great, biggest military, best everything, and then they come back and say, oh, no, we can't figure out how to enroll people in a paperwork administrative program? Come on. It's like ridiculous. Of course we can enroll people in this without a problem.
Yeah. So you know, what's the pitch to businesses? I know this is, you know, your group is reaching out to businesses to say, hey, sign on to this. I know this is a relatively new group. You know, how's that coming along, bringing corporate America into this?
Actually, the pitch is well received. The only businesses that really resist are health insurance companies. Good luck finding an entrepreneur or a business owner who wants to be in the business of administering health insurance for their employees. No one starts a business or no one works their career to get to the CEO position because they've aspired to administer some massive health insurance apparatus for their employees.
No, you're absolutely right. But the other thing that comes along with this, and my wife was just telling me about this article she was reading about this young woman. And the article was about why don't millennials have, family doctors anymore? You know, why are they going to these urgent care centers? And, you know, she told me the story about this young woman that was quoted in the article that said, you know, the companies keep changing insurance every year. So I have to get new doctors and I have to do all this other stuff. And it just seems to me there's so much waste. There's so much chaos in the system that we currently have that there's got to be a better way. And maybe we're at that moment where, you know, people are tired of having to change doctors and having to, you know, jump through hoops to get the minimal care that they need. Maybe we are at this moment.
Well, I need listeners to remember two numbers, 2 and 20. 2% is the administrative overhead cost of Medicare. 20% is the administrative overhead cost of health insurance companies. That difference between 20 and 2, that 18% difference, that's the profit margin of health insurance companies. So, yeah, there's a heck of a lot of waste. It's called that difference between 20 and 2. As we take away that 18% spread that's just going to line the pockets of the health insurance companies, we're going to make the whole system more cost effective.
Right. So last question I've got for you, because, you know, I keep getting hit by people who work in the insurance industry are going, no, you're going to lose, I'm going to lose my job. What are you going to do with all of these people who work shuffling papers around for insurance and denying claims and people who are digging into people's backgrounds? Because I'm guessing we're going to make rescission great again at some point in the near future once they kill off the ACA. You know, what are you going to do with all these people?
Well, first of all, anytime any jobs are lost is one job too many, because there are real humans with families and kids who need to be fed that are effective. That said, let's have an honest comparison between the effective displaced jobs from the health insurance industry versus the legacy of displaced jobs we have from manufacturing and coal. Right? The reality of the last 30 years is that politicians have told us they were going to retrain manufacturing workers. They never did it. It was a lie. It was fanciful to think that we were going to retrain people who'd been working 40 years in manufacturing and turn them into computer engineers, right? By comparison, though, I think it's a different ball of wax to say that people who are working in administrative jobs, doing paperwork in the health insurance industry, have skills that are perfectly transferable to doing other kinds of administrative jobs and paperwork in other industries.
So you don't see it as a big obstacle?
No, because as opposed to the travesty of all the people who lost their jobs from manufacturing, where they didn't have skills that were translatable to other industries, in this case, the people whose jobs will be displaced from health insurance companies shrinking have skills that are easily translatable to other similar administrative industries.
I think that's a great answer. One I'm going to have to remember, and I may steal.
Thanks.
Because you know that's one of the things I get continually hit with. Still, I'm a Medicare for all guy. I think we need to make sure that everyone has coverage from day one, cradle to grave, because there's so many other things that go with this. You can talk about what keeps us healthy. You talk about the chemicals that are in our food, the air that we breathe, the water that we drink. There's so many things that positive could come out of this. Yes. Outside of just making sure that everyone is covered.
Not to mention that we aren't accounting for all the new businesses that will be formed by entrepreneurs,
yep,
who currently are staying in jobs will be freed up to start companies, and those will create new industries potentially.
Yeah, good stuff, Joe. I appreciate the time. Love
Thanks. To
have you come back and talk to us again. This is obviously going to keep popping up. Thanks so much.
Thanks, Rick.
Good stuff. Joe Sandberg, founder of Business for Medicare for All. And look, I've said for a very long time, it just blows my mind that corporate America would want anything to do with health insurance. Just my thoughts. Quick break. Right back.